Together, they all headed to the Tower Master's room, where the inert, sphere-shaped shard stabilizer was located. After seizing the 7 world stones from Urey, they now had all they needed to activate it. John gave the 7 world stones to Cav one at a time, watching carefully as the artificer slotted them into place. They had to be oriented correctly, though how Cav knew if they were in fact oriented the right way, John had no idea. But Cav seemed to have a clear understanding of how everything should work, and after double-checking the shard stabilizer a number of times, he stood up and nodded to John.
If you put your mana in, it should work fine.
John stepped forward, flame springing up around his hand. As soon as it came close to the shard stabilizer, the orb lifted slightly and dragged John's mana in. It felt to John as if he was filling an empty bowl, and with a faint frown, he poured more mana into it. The first tongue of flame had vanished into the mist at the center of the sphere, and as John sent more flames in, they vanished as well. He had put a considerable amount of mana in, more than he had ever stored in Rabir's crystal, and still the shard stabilizer hadn't activated. Slightly confused, he looked at Cav, who shrugged.
Keep going, I guess.
With a nod, John did just that, increasing the flow of mana. He was always worried he might destroy anything his mana touched, but the more mana he put into the device, the clearer it was that it could withstand all of his power.
This thing is incredible.
He brought his other hand forward to put mana in from both hands.
Definitely a Forge Master creation.
Slowly but surely, the runes on the sphere began to light up, and one by one they shone brightly, each one seeming to brand itself into John's soul. It was a strange feeling, and at first John nearly rejected it, but remembering what Cav had said, he continued pouring all of his mana into the orb. For nearly half a day, he continued to fill it with mana. He had no idea where the mana was going, but then, after nearly 12 hours, he finally felt as if it was full. Slowly, the mana it was absorbing from him tapered, and then finally stopped entirely. With a whir, the device rose and activated, a gentle wave spreading out around it, and John heard a faint voice in his head and saw a window pop up in front of him.
Welcome to the World Preservation System. Please wait while the system scans this world.
With a whir, the sphere began to turn, each of the world stones glinting as it passed by John. He could see a countdown timer.
It looks like it's going to take 24 hours to scan the world.
Uh-oh, that doesn't seem good. Isn't that like 7 days Urey has to come after us?
Yes, it is.
So what do we do while we wait?
We begin preparing. He will come, I feel it in my bones. And when he does, we're in for a fierce fight. What we need to do is try to protect the valley as much as possible.
What about Ferdy and the others?
I've got a kind of crazy idea, but I'm honestly not sure if it'll work. We can't really invite them all to live in the valley, and I have a feeling this shard stabilizer isn't going to be able to maintain this entire world. There's simply too much intervening distance between us and the Beast Continent, which means if we want both areas to survive, we either need to move closer to them, or they need to move closer to us.
Looking at John, Ellie's eyes widened.
Are you really thinking of doing what I think you're suggesting?
Honestly, I have no idea. It's a pretty wild plan. But if it works, it'd be pretty cool. And if it doesn't, well, then we're gonna have some problems, but don't worry, my ideas always work out.
Not the most reassuring statement I've ever heard.
John patted Cavod on the shoulder.
Head back to the farm and take these two with you. If you can, try to figure out how much time we have.
I will.
Ellie walked over and grabbed John's shirt. Pulling him down, she kissed him, her lips lingering on his for a moment before she pulled away.
Please be safe.
Don't worry. Safe is practically my middle name.
Not allowing the others to contradict him, John teleported out of the room. When he appeared in the reception hall outside, he saw Rebia, who was waiting for him.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Thinking for a moment, John nodded.
Yes. System, are you there?
The system, which had been strangely silent even as John destroyed the Cabal's shard world, manifested, forming a small, almost invisible ball of energy.
Yes, Player John Sutton. I'm here.
Before, I asked you if you'd be willing to take a chance. If you'd be willing to change, be remade. I need my answer.
What is it you are going to do?
I'm going to try to save this world. But not in the way you're thinking. Too much of it has gone bad. Too much of it has become cancerous. And we can't save the whole thing. So we'll save the pieces we can. But if you're the world spirit, or the remnant of it, there's no way you'll survive what's about to come. That might change, however, if you have roots in the valley.
As innocent and naive as the system was, it wasn't stupid. And seeing John glance at Rebia, it put two and two together, figuring out what he was planning.
You wish me to give myself to this plant?
Yes. You have a tremendous amount of knowledge, but your connection to this world is tenuous because of the destruction it has undergone. Originally, I thought it was a problem that started with me and my flame. But now I understand that the fate of this world was sealed long before I came here. I was just your last-ditch effort to put things back into balance. The spell you've created, the system, would work to keep this world in one piece just long enough for our enemies to arrive and eradicate the whole thing. You know, I always wondered why Yurei didn't just show up and obliterate us all. Well, it turns out, destroying worlds is the fastest way to get yourself on everybody's bad side. So I imagine that pretty soon, I'm gonna have people coming after me as well. But Yurei is clearly crazy enough that he doesn't care anymore. And we just destroyed his world. So he's undoubtedly on his way to destroy ours. Even if I balance it, even if I commit the rest of my life to operating that spell, there's no way we'd be able to keep the entire world together. And even less when Yurei shows up and starts to rip things apart. It's just not going to be possible. We do have another option, however. Join with Rebia. Take advantage of her connection to the valley and build anew.
Do you know what you're asking?
I do. I'm asking both of you to make a significant sacrifice for this world.
There was a moment of silence.
Very well. If she wishes for it, I will give myself to her.
Rebia was quiet, and John just watched her. Ultimately, the decision was hers, and he wouldn't force it on anyone. After nearly 2 minutes of silence, she looked at him.
Can you explain to me your thought process?
Of course. One of the things I've observed, that with a little bit of direction, growth increases. There are many powerful people in this world, but almost none of them can overcome the natural barriers. Part of the reason for that is they have no way of knowing where they should go. So they spend considerable time casting about for the correct path. I didn't have that issue at all. One of the benefits of the system was that I had immense clarity in what sorts of things I should be working on. Though the quest did not give me actual rewards, they did prompt me towards the path that would lead to those rewards. And having you and the system combine, I hope to be able to extend that to everyone in the valley, allowing the system to expand rather than die. My hope is that those who live in the valley would have the same direction that I did. Unfortunately, on its own, the system doesn't seem to be able to do that. That changes, however, with the power source. Its ability to communicate with me seems to be tied to my mana. Most people just don't have mana powerful enough to allow for that communication.
Which will change if it's tied into the Shadow Tower. I see.
Exactly. Currently, you are the tower spirit of the Shadow Tower and control the output of the mana contained in it. Our world is going to be getting a lot smaller soon, and the entire thing is going to be tied into this tower through your root system. I figure, why not bind all the systems together to make sure we're not working at cross purposes?
It was always my ambition to see what lay beyond this world.
I'll take you anywhere you want to go.
A small smile curled at the corner of his lips.
And I mean anywhere.
It sounds like a grand adventure. Very well. I think it's worth the risk it carries. Let's do it.
John wasn't exactly sure what this process would look like, though he had done some study on the subject of world spirits in Candle Scholar Tower. He had learned while he was there that there was another type of spirit a world could gain, called a guardian spirit, a powerful entity that watched over the world but had more ability to interact. This is what he was attempting to do by granting Rabir the authority the system had, transforming her from simply the Shadow Tower's spirit into the guardian spirit of what would remain of this world. He had spoken truthfully about his desire for everyone in the valley to gain access to the system, though not just for the reasons he had mentioned. He had noticed something the first time he had gone to Candle Scholar Tower, a faint sense of weakness in those mages he'd discovered outside of this world. The same was true for the beasts. There was a certain hardiness to the people who lived in this world, and John was curious to see what would happen to them as they spread their wings and moved into the wider, endless worlds. He was hoping that through the general adoption of the system, the efforts of the people who remained in the valley would be able to be focused through the granting of quests and the like. Rabir would also be able to teach them how to awaken their classes, ensuring that every single person born into the valley would be able to gain a class. This was John's ultimate goal, to work on improving how well the people who remained could absorb mana, allowing the world itself to be upgraded further as well. So far, he had been working to maintain a balance, and even now still had the enchantment that diffused his pure mana into the world. Once he had balanced the flame element, their corner of the world would be stable. He still, however, thought it a good idea to increase the mana density of the world over time. The food everyone was eating was helping with that process, but would take generations. Helping everyone gain classes would speed that up considerably.
Do you know how to merge?
He got the impression it was nodding. The small ball of light began to drift through the air, and John followed quietly, walking down through the tower until they reached the bottom floor. Seeing that it was going to continue down, John asked Rabir what was down there.
The bottom of the tower, which is my main route.
John had actually been here once before, and as they proceeded down into the dark room, faint lights began to appear as flowers opened up their petals all around them. They arrived at the edge of the main route, and John couldn't help but marvel at it. He knew he was only seeing a fraction of it, but to him it looked like a nearly flat wall. This close, Rabir could manifest herself without her flower petals, and her mental projection appeared next to John. She stretched out her hand, and the small ball of light slowly settled on her palm. John watched quietly, ever vigilant for anything that might go wrong. With a flash of light, the system and Rabir began to merge. The process wasn't long, and only took a few seconds, though it seemed much longer to John because of how intently he was watching. There was a faint shift, and something seemed to bleed out of John, vanishing from him. Surprised, he tried to call up his status, but nothing appeared.
System?
There was no answer. The system had vanished entirely, absorbed into Rabir's hand, and as she opened her eyes, it was with a new gaze, almost as if she was seeing the world for the first time. She turned, looking this way and that, her expression transforming into one of awe.
This is incredible. I can see everything.
Well, that's a lot of things.
Well, not everything, but a lot of things. I'm going to need some time to adjust to this. It's a bit overwhelming.
Sure. Just let me know if you need anything.
Thank you.
The bow Rabir gave him was one of deep gratitude, and John could sense sincerity in it. She had already begun to integrate with the world tree root, and he could feel the faint echo of the tiny root's aura in her presence. And now, having merged with the system as well, her presence had undergone another change, growing stronger and more powerful. Despite being locked to this world, it was clear Rabir had grown beyond it. As far as John was concerned, it would only be a matter of time before she ascended to the status of a guardian spirit. She vanished, retreating back into her roots as she tried to process her metamorphosis. Realizing he was no longer needed, John left the room and headed for his next task. He had told Ellie he was going to try something crazy, and it was true. This world couldn't stand his true strength. Even when he had been fighting against Yurei, he had not actually unleashed his power completely for fear of what it might do. for the first time, he was actually going to use his full strength, and part of him was excited to see what he could accomplish. Striding up into the air over the valley, John flashed across the sky until he was out over the ocean. At the coast, he paused for a moment to look back, and then he began to cross, traveling the many miles that separated the continents. When he arrived, finally, at the Beast Kingdom, he lifted his hand and summoned his flame.
Ferdy.
His voice wasn't loud, but seemed to find its way directly to the giant bull who was lounging in the palace. With a surprised moo, Ferdy jumped to his feet, his eyes turning toward the coast where John was. Letting Gora know he was going with a couple of short grunts and a huff, he charged out of the palace. Forming a crimson streak across the sky, he hurtled toward John, slowing to a trot as he neared him. He came to a stop beside John, his eyes bright.
We've got a job to do.
Ferdy let out a happy snort. Closing his eyes, John reached out and tapped the small blue flame that hung in the air. It rapidly multiplied, spreading out in a line that followed along the coast, beginning to trace out the kingdom of beasts. The line didn't meet up on the other side of the island, as the beast lands were nearly four times the size of the valley and the mountains around, but that was fine with John. He snapped his fingers and the flames linked together, shooting chains down into the water that surrounded the giant island. Everywhere the flames existed, John's mind could go as well. As he stood there with his hands outstretched and his eyes closed, he felt the threads of flame weaving their way into the earth, forming a giant net. When it was deep enough, his fingers twitched and the flames changed direction, joining together to form one giant woven basket, closing off at the bottom. His hands grasped and chains made of pure flame spun into existence. Each was miles long and connected at multiple points to the huge net he'd created.
Ferdy?
He turned, tossing the chains around the waiting bull's neck. Seeming to know exactly what John intended to do, Ferdy accepted the harness, shifting his weight slightly to allow it to settle onto his shoulders properly. He issued a loud bellow that seemed to echo over the island, and all of the beasts stilled, their eyes opening wide in shock.
Let's go.
Letting out a snort that shot flame from his nostrils, Ferdy leaned forward, pressing his weight against the blue flame harness he wore. At first, there was nothing, but with another snort, Ferdy took a step forward, throwing every ounce of his strength behind it. His hoof hit the air, and the entire ocean trembled as the island was dragged up.
I can give you a hand if you like.
Ferdy let out a snort and shook his head as he took another step.
This way.
John walked in front to help guide him. Ferdy's head was down and his muscles strained, but each step that he took was faster than the one before. As the island trembled, it was dragged from its place in the sea and pulled up into the air. Letting out a long moo that echoed around the world, Ferdy continued to stomp forward. Though he was walking in the air above the ocean, each burning hoofprint caused the seawater below him to explode, sending water spraying into the air as if a massive rock had been slammed down on the surface. Though the seawater surged back in to fill those voids, there still seemed to be a faint impression marking Ferdy's tracks as he dragged the island across the ocean. For a full day, he and John walked, transporting the Beast Kingdom until they were a scant 100 miles from the valley. A narrow strip of sea separated the Beast Kingdom from the valley, and it was here that John decided to plant it.
This is good.
Ferdy let out a tired huff. Unhooking the bull from the harness, John pointed his finger down, and the net of flame carefully lowered into the water, causing a boiling hiss. John's flames sprang high, and with a flick of his finger, he sent them deep into the earth, carving out a place for the island to sit. His hand, which had been palm down, flipped palm up, and the flames shifted, their jumping tongues somehow seeming gentler. Wherever the flame passed, the earth was melded together, and the net burned away, rising to the surface until it formed a ring around the island. It was as if the Beast Kingdom had always existed in this place. John could feel a faint hint of exhaustion in his heart. Never before had he used this much strength, but he felt as if it was entirely worth it. The flames surrounding the Beast Kingdom faded away, restoring the beaches before they vanished. Seeing that the flames had disappeared, Gora flew up into the air to join John and Ferdy, staring around in utter shock. Not even knowing what to say, she looked at John, the man she had once captured and tried to convince to become her husband. All she could do was bow in absolute awe of his strength. Annoyed by the attention she was giving John, Ferdy let out a moo and butted her side, causing John to laugh.
You don't have to be jealous. She likes you. She's scared of me.
The faint blush on Gora's cheeks seemed to indicate that was true, and it cheered Ferdy up immensely. John was about to turn and head back to the valley when he felt a faint change in the air, and his eyes snapped skyward. As if to confirm his fear, Rabia's voice sounded in his ear a moment later.
John, our guest has arrived.
I can see that.
Indeed he could, as could everyone else in the valley and in the Beast Kingdom. High up in the sky, a large hand had appeared, seeming to press down toward them. To John, it felt as if a heavy weight was pushing toward him, and that pressure was all the stronger for everyone else. Though it appeared that the hand was directly above them, John could tell that wasn't true. Rather, it seemed as if the gigantic figure, who John assumed was Yure in his sea giant form, was over the Great Plains. It had been there that Yure had planned the invasion of this world, and so it made sense that those were the coordinates he used to arrive here. The world, however, was rejecting him, not wanting to accommodate someone of his power. It seemed to be the last effort of the system to save this world.
Be ready to fight. Hopefully it won't come to that, but there's a chance we will all have to do battle if we want to survive.
In a flash, John was gone, and as he made his way into the Shadow Tower, he tried to come up with a solid plan. The problem was, he had been hoping for a little bit more time, but Yure hadn't given that to them. The fact that it had already taken him an entire day to get there meant either he had done a lot of preparation or, and John was hoping this was the case, the collapse of his world shard had hurt him badly, slowing him down. Appearing in the Tower Master's chambers, John saw the shard stabilizer floating there and heard the voice in his head.
World scanned. Please select the area to preserve.
The knowledge of how to do that was present in John's mind as soon as he saw the device, and with a thought, he selected the valley, the mountains around it, and the Beast Kingdom in the ocean. There were a number of other options that presented themselves, but John ignored all of them, focusing only on that area.
How long will this take to activate?
The device hesitated for a moment before responding.
Approximately 1 hour.
Letting out his breath, John nodded. That meant he would have to preserve this world for that hour, keeping it in one piece, even as Yure tried to tear it apart.
Would you like to separate a selected area of the world?
Fine. Do it.
A moment later, John was shooting up into the sky, leaving the Shadow Tower and the valley far behind. Yure hovered in the void above the world, his body entirely covered in the pitch-black water he had controlled in the Cabal's shard. As he tried to tear his way into John's world, the void ate at him, tearing chunks of the dark water from his body. But Yure clearly didn't care. He thrust his hand forward, smashing through the barrier that kept the void outside and clawing his way in. He was met by a flaming fist that slammed into his chest, trying to drive him out. But the water that surrounded him surged, meeting the punch with equal force and sending John flying. Like an evil god, the water giant stretched its arm through the hole, its hands grasping on either side of the hole he had created, and shoved his head and shoulder through. As John recovered from the counterforce of his punch and shot forward again, Yure forced his way into the world. The pure mana that made up the water giant began to seep into everything around him, threads of ink appearing, tracing their way through the air. In the same way John's mana, when fully unleashed in this world, would burn it away, The ink-like water Yure commanded contaminated everything it touched, spreading, replicating itself, and forming an area where it was impossible for anything else to live. John met it squarely, summoning his own flames to do battle. He pounded against the giant, forcing him back a step and trying to push him from the world. But once again, Yure slapped John aside. It wasn't that John was suddenly weaker than the Supreme Mage, but rather that he was so used to restraining his strength in this world that each time he began to attack, he would pull back, resulting in him losing every clash against Yure's water giant. Shaking his head, John rose up in the air as the water giant finally pulled itself all the way into the world.
I found you, and I will do to your world what you did to mine.
Despite how dark and heavy the water was, John could see Yure perfectly. The Supreme Mage rested in the middle of the giant's chest, his body an absolute wreck. It appeared as if he was as much held together by the pressure of the water around him as he was holding it together. The destruction of his world had clearly taken a dramatic toll on the Supreme Mage, and his once calm expression was nowhere to be seen. He wore nothing but rags, and his hair was tattered, much of it missing. That he had survived the destruction of a world was impressive enough, though John had assumed he would. But the state of his manner was an absolute mess due to trying to survive in the chaos of the void, no doubt.
You shouldn't have come here. You should have run and hidden while you could.
Yure, who clearly didn't want to talk, launched himself forward, intending to crush John where he stood. A faint blue flame erupted around John, covering his entire body as he shook his head. The raging water giant let out a blast of destructive mana that rolled across the sky, threatening to drop down on the valley and wash it away. But John lifted his hand, and it all evaporated.
Not in my world.
John flew forward. Back in the valley, the small temple on the top of the mountain where the eternal flame burned was lit with blue light as the flame grew stronger. Down below, those in the mountain cities and those in the valley stopped and turned, looking toward that blue flame. It was unknown who started it, but one by one, those who followed the eternal flame bowed their heads. There was no shout, no yell, no calling, no sense of show. They simply bowed their heads toward the eternal flame and then turned and continued with their work, trusting entirely that John would handle this crisis as he had handled all the others. John could feel that strange, intangible sense enveloping him, and his breathing grew calm.
You are not welcome.
His hand pushed out gently. The flame that covered his body expanded rapidly, transforming into a giant palm that pushed into the giant, causing Yure to scream in pain and rage as it burned away the water, throwing the giant back through the hole he had created in the world. Almost dispassionately, John gazed at the edges of that hole and saw the dark water mana Yure had brought with him beginning to eat away at its edges. The void was beginning to seep in as well, causing cracks to radiate outward from it. John could have tried to repair it, but there was no need. Instead, he turned and pointed, causing a small spell construct to appear over the valley. That done, he turned and hurtled through the air, slipping through the hole in the top of the world as he chased after Yure. Emerging in the void, he could feel the chaotic forces tearing at him, but the flames that covered him burned all the brighter. Thrown from the world, Yure hurled himself at John, intending to smash him into pieces, but John took a step forward, his body growing in size as the flames thickened around him. Meeting Yure's punch with one of his own, both of them staggered backward. The sea giant let out a roar of rage, and Yure thrust his hand forward, sending out his domain to try to capture the mana around them. The void, as it was called, was not in fact a void at all. It was instead an entirely chaotic realm of pure mana strands that clashed against each other with such force that they ground everything they touched to dust, including each other. From this chaos, Yurei, in his maddened state, managed to pull giant strands of water mana that struck out at John like whips, tearing into his flame-covered body.
I am supreme!
Yurei roared, even as blood began to drip from his mouth and nose. He ignored the cost to his body as he pulled more mana from the void, hurling it at John. Despite the power of his flames, the strength of the attacks tore John apart. His body ripped into pieces as the mana crashed through him. Yet any joy Yurei might have felt at this sight was short-lived. From one of the wisps of flame that remained, John's body began to reform, reappearing as if it had never been harmed in the first place. Blood streamed from Yurei's nose, soaking his chest as he forced the chaotic mana around him into another attack that he launched at John. When the attack was just about to reach him, Yurei suddenly saw John look up at him, fixing a calm gaze that seemed to cut straight to the Supreme Mage's heart.
Just when I think I've reached the limits of it, somehow I find out there's still more.
His hand rose, and a perfect sphere of blue flame erupted around him, blocking the attack the Supreme Mage had thrown at him and spreading out into the void. Everywhere the blue flame went, order was restored, the incredibly chaotic mana calming down and transforming into gently flickering flames. John took a small step forward that somehow spanned the gap between him and Yurei, a single finger reaching out to tap on the water giant's chest. Steam rose as Yurei's sea giant evaporated into nothingness. Not understanding what had happened, Yurei found himself locked in place, staring at a being made of pure blue fire. Though his heart was filled with bitter unwillingness, Yurei found himself resigned to his fate. His defeat was inevitable, and he knew it. That he had ever even tried to contest with John was the utter height of foolishness. Seeing that John was about to pull his hand back, Yurei mustered what remained of his strength and attempted to grasp onto John's burning arm. Even when his hand began to melt away, he still tried.
You! What are you?
A good question. One I wish I knew the answer to.
John stepped back, and his flame retreated with him, allowing the void to rush back in. Yurei didn't even manage to make a noise before the forces of the void tore him apart. The last thing he saw was a being made of pure flame, looking at him in the midst of the darkness. Standing above his crumbling world, John, who had truly shed the skin he cloaked himself in for the first time, pondered the question Yurei had asked, unable to come up with an answer. What he did know, however, is that he was intrinsically tied to the millions of people who had sought refuge in the valley, to the millions of quiet blue flames burning in the hearts of those who were part of the Ecclesia and honored the Eternal Flame. That connection was what kept him grounded, what allowed him to remain sane, and it was for their sakes that he would save this world. He could feel the spell he had cast over the valley straining to slow the destruction of the world, and though he could have borrowed the endless power of the void to stitch the hole closed, John chose not to. Instead, he lifted his hand, pulling strands of chaotic mana from the void around him, and wove it into a human form, clothing himself once again in his familiar skin. The blue flame that flickered through him renewed his body to its best, strongest state, and John began to fly back down toward the world. Just before he got to the growing hole that had been ripped in the sky, he heard a chime in his head.
Area preserved. Entering transportation mode.
With a hum, a large chunk of the world suddenly shrank down into an orb as the rest of the world rapidly deteriorated, being consumed by the void. John had not been expecting that, and his flames surged out of him, covering the parts of the world that had been abandoned. Millions of tiny streaks shot toward the still condensing orb as he pulled the humans and beasts who had not been in the valley or the Beast Kingdom out of the crumbling world, depositing them neatly into a mountain valley. The orb, which appeared to contain the preserved area of the world as two large islands surrounded by a sea, dropped into John's hand. Staring at it for a moment, John looked up in time to see the last bit of the world he had tried so hard to protect fade away, transformed into pure chaos. For a good long while, he stood alone in the void, holding the valley in his hand. He could see the tiny farm in it, and felt like he could sense Ellie and Ferdy standing in the yard, waiting for him. After a moment of thought, he waved his hand, and they appeared next to him, surrounded in a thin layer of his flame to keep the void at bay. Hugging Ellie around the waist, he lifted her up onto Ferdy's back and jumped up behind her, handing her the world to hold. Sigvald appeared in a flash of lightning and jumped up onto Ferdy's head. Turning to look up at John, Ellie touched his chin lightly with her fingers.
What now?
Tapping Ferdy with his heels, John directed him to amble into the void as his arm tightened around Ellie's waist, holding her close.
What do you say we finish that honeymoon?
We hope you've enjoyed this production of Battle Mage Farmer 6, Preservation, by Seth Ring. Narrated by Peter Holdway, featuring Wynn Delano as John, Jenna Sharp as Ellie, Matthew Bassett as Kavad, Eric Messner as Yurei, Michael John Casey as Eowyn, Dawn Ursula as Rabia, Nanette Savard as Foyrath, Nora Ashrati as Mora, Alex Hill Knight as Quell, David Quiqui as Marcus, Maria Amelia Park as Nessa, and Tanya Milojevic as Eva, with additional performances by Andrew James Spooner, Rob McFadgen, Nazia Chowdhury, Colleen Delaney, Jean Rosalino, Charlie Albers, Raina Gabriel, Jonathan Lee Taylor, Drew Kopas, James Konachek, Bradley Foster Smith, Jerry J. Marshall, Yasmin Toison, Christopher Walker, Christopher Williams, R. J. Bailey, Rob Moreira, Laura C. Harris, Terrence Azelford, James Lewis, Neha Gargava, and Keith Richards. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Christopher Williams. Dialogue editing by Vanessa Thurlow. Graphic audio sound design by Connor McGinley. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Sidney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Copyright 2023, Seth Ring. All rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with Ethan Books. Sound recording copyright 2026 by Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Graphic Audio is an RB Media audio brand. This recording is protected by copyright. Unauthorized copying, sharing, or distribution is prohibited. Thank you. Keep listening to hear samples from A Tale of the Coven by R.A. Salvatore and the Fae Spy Academy series by C.N. Crawford and Alex Rivers, now available in Graphic Audio. Find these titles along with audiobook giveaways, discounts, new releases, recommendations, and more at graphicaudio.net.
I glance at Talon cautiously. Whose blood is on your sword?
Someone made the mistake of testing my patience. You'd think people would have learned by now.
Another traitor?
I won't let anyone get in my way.
A chill ripples up my spine as he stalks over the snow. The air seems to grow heavier and otherworldly until the forest opens into a clearing, a path lined with ancient statues and pale purple hedges. On the far end of the path, the Lost Palace emerges from the wintry forest, a haunting edifice of twists and curves. Ice and snow glaze the stones, sparkling in the pale light. Fog billows around a frozen garden of heather and bare yews. Moths flutter around us, not metallic, but real ones that are bright blue. Corbinelle moths. Beautiful to look at, but they're venomous. Like Talon, really. Stone arches frame a door of carved oak, peaked in the center. As we walk closer, my gaze flicks up at the statues. I stop to stare at one of them, a towering, crowned queen with long hair that drapes over her robes. My gaze slides to the symbols on her wrists, and an ember of recognition sparks in my mind. The encircled triple spirals remind me of the ones I saw in Nimue's tower, and look exactly like the ones I'd seen on my wrists for a moment in the bathtub. As I stare at them, cold magic slides over my wrists. Talon follows my stare.
That's Nimue. She built this palace long ago. She's buried here, in fact. Did you know that before she was the Lady of the Lake, my grandmother had that role? Before she was queen.
I stare at the triple spirals again. Three ladies of the lake. Queen Morgan.
How did Nimue die?
He stalks toward the door.
I don't know, but she died soon after the Pendragon War.
You told me Mordred was your mother's lover, but they never had children.
And Mordred is also...
My grandfather. Yes, my father stole his own father's lover after Mordred cursed her and died. And that's where I come from. Well, quite messy, really. But technically free of incest. After ancient gossip, are you?
I'll take any gossip I can get. And what happened to Mordred? How did he die?
I only know rumors. For some reason, all references to him have been ripped out of our books, burned from records, but I assume he died in the war with Morgan.
As he opens the door, he glances back at me.
I really should find out what happened to my grandfather.
The woman seemed frustrated. She clutched her crystal tightly and scrunched her eyes, shivering with intensity and frustration.
Can you feel it?
I feel only the cold wind.
Marin stared at Gavina curiously.
No.
What is it you wish me to feel?
The magic.
I am Uskar Regian. I always feel the magic of our god.
More magic here. Like at Kraos Adiad.
Gavina had brought her out to this windy ledge, far afield of the encampment, with a promise to show her some revelation, something special regarding the Song of Uskar. While the Uskar Regian could appreciate the excitement of the soon-to-be witch, she was still in a foul mood and would only humor Gavina for so long. She didn't answer, other than to stare incredulously at the middle-aged woman.
I brought you.
Gavina shook her head.
I wanted to show you.
Then show me something.
The magic. I wanted to show you that the magic here was thick, like in the caves. I wanted to float down this cliff and back to you, to prove to you that you were wise in picking...
Then do it.
Tealig walked around the ledge from the other end, moving past a shocked and angry Marin to stand between and behind the two women.
Why are you here?
She told me of this place.
Marin's eyes widened in shock.
Do it! Float down. You have the power. You belong. The Uskar Regian chose right.
There is no... I cannot.
Tealig dropped his gaze and shook his head, shoulders slumping in clear disappointment.
Oh, Gavina.
What game do you play?
Tealig stabbed his arm out, launching Gavina from the ledge.
Do it!
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind. On the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.